Welcome everyone to the Pick and Pop Podcast episode 7. Jeez, we're up to episode 7 already, Craig. As we're just speaking about before we started recording, we're trying to think of any Aussie hoops players that donned the number 7 recently, and I came up with number 7, Thon Maker.
Did you come up with that before or after doing some research?
Well, I came up with it before, and it was more just I needed confirmation that Thon wore number 7. I should know better. I should have known that straight away. But, yeah, if you can think of any other Australian superstar that played the game of basketball that wore number 7, let us know. So, season 1, episode 7. It's gone quickly. But as we always do, we cover the very best and the very worst and anything in between in Aussie hoops for the week. Craig Freeman, Steve Chalmers light it up. We obviously touch on some big stories from Australian basketball. Some big stories, in fact, this week. Mitch Creek, probably the biggest one, signed for Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. We'll touch on that a little bit later on. Of course, our I Just Wanters and anything funky. We've also got a great question to touch on right at the end from Elliot Wood on Twitter. So we thank him for his contribution to the podcast this week. But Craig, a big week in Aussie hoops. Was there anything that really stood out to you at the top of the show?
A little bit quiet on the home shores with the two Boomers games going on. Australian Boomers, not Melbourne Boomers. So NBL had some time off. I know you caught both those games, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. There was some more great action in the WNBL, which I think the season's been great so far. Obviously, some bad news on the WNBL over the last few weeks, and we hope the best comes out of that. Of course, interact with us. We're both on Twitter at CP Chalmers and at C Freeman, SEE Freeman. We'd love to hear feedback, comments, questions. Also, leave us a review, subscribe, rate. It is all very much appreciated by us too and helps us get seen by more eyes. And if you're going to tweet us or chuck something on Insta or Facebook, use hashtag PNRPod.
We do say rate 5 stars, but of course, it's not up to us. It's up to you.
You can rate 4.
You can rate us whatever you like.
Less than 4, don't rate. I'll be honest. Just save yourself some time.
Just subscribe and just leave the rating to someone else. But of course, feedback's always welcome. So let's start with our first of the week, and that's Light It Up. Well, as you mentioned at the top of the show, Craig, the NBL had a one-week hiatus in regards to the Australian Boomers taking to the floor at Margaret Court Arena a couple of times on occasion.
And everyone lit it up there for the Boomers.
Well, there was pretty much two non-existent games in that one, but we'll touch on that a little bit later. This is Light It Up. It was a nice segue, but the NBA and the WNBL were certainly in full effect. And Ben Simmons, well, he hasn't been really lighting it up in the scorers column, but he's certainly been doing it elsewhere.
Yeah, he's been playing pretty well with Butler in town, but we know, obviously, he's probably not going to get the shot attempts game to game, sharing the floor with Embiid and Jimmy Buckets. He did have 19 points, 12 boards and 6 assists, 2 steals versus Memphis in his most recent game, and has been around the mark with those sorts of numbers, around between 15 and 16, 17 points on most nights. And Karli Mirotić, in a loss to Adelaide, had a nice 26 points and 9 boards in the WNBL.
Yeah, it was named in the WNBL Team of the Week, but I thought Karli was certainly an individual to highlight with the 26 points. I know the result didn't go the Dandenong Rangers way. Hey, on Ben Simmons, is he... there's probably a two-part question. Is he ever going to find a jump shot in the NBA? And the second part of the question, has there ever been such an enigmatic superstar who hasn't had a jump shot?
Blake Griffin was probably a superstar before he could shoot.
Well, that's right. He was probably put down the pathway there as just a dunker. Mm. Found that range in, what, year 4 or 5? And now look at him.
Yeah,
he's
shooting
a superstar.
I think he's shooting over 40% from 3 this year, Blake. But I guess Blake probably didn't have the complete withdrawal of a jumper that Simmons has. Like, he just didn't shoot him that often when he was early on.
Does Ben Simmons get blindsided and get traded to one of the dumpster teams in Detroit, like Blake did?
Well, but Blake could shoot three. Blake was shooting him a little more when he was in LA. It is interesting. I guess because he is such a unique player, we haven't really seen someone in that mold that also doesn't shoot. Like, not many point guards are that good that can't shoot, but He's not really a proper point guard, and it's weird. That's probably the only reason he's been able to make it work is because he's so big and can he just barrel people towards the rim. Giannis still can't shoot threes.
Well, that's true. So maybe it's becoming an interesting trend going forward that you can see two of, arguably, the two best players in the game. They're probably not the best players in the game now, but they could be in 2-3 years' time. It could be Ben Simmons and Giannis's league. And those two guys just can't shoot jumpers. Is it something that we're going into post the Steph Curry era?
But see, if you like, Giannis is only dominating this year to this extent because they've got four shooters around him, and Simmons looked at his best last year especially when Embiid was out, when they just put four shooters around him. They had Bellinelli and Ilyasova. So you still have to have the floor spread, but if you're physical freaks the way those two guys are, I guess it's tough to back off them, because if you back off Simmons or Giannis, you just give them a head of steam, and you try to pick them up when they're 3 feet from the basket and they go all the way through you. So
is that some part of a reason why Philadelphia had struggled this early part of the season? I know they had a little bit of change in personnel to start the season. They lost a couple of those shooters that you mentioned. Is that something, part of the reason why they struggled early on?
Probably not directly because Simmons can't shoot or won't shoot. More so because you had him paired with Fultz for a lot of that time, and you didn't have...
Well, he can shoot, clearly.
Fultz, yeah, definitely. We all know that. And he didn't have the moments where they could just go four out with Simmons as the only non-shooter, where they were quite often having two guys who couldn't shoot. And if Simmons had the ball, then there was always the space being taken up down low with Fultz, and then you've got Embiid who needs the ball down low at times. So it's sorted out a little bit. Buckets isn't going to shoot as well as he is right now, but he's still too good to leave that wide open, and they've looked pretty good on offense so far, and it's been clicking. I think the defense on the defensive end there are just monsters with Butler and Simmons on and Embiid inside.
If you're Philly going forward, would you rather Ben Simmons to be working on his outside game or Joel Embiid to be working on his outside game?
Embiid's outside game is pretty good already, so I guess I'd take Simmons to work on his, but...
That's true. There you go. Just an insight into Philadelphia's future and potentially the NBA's future going down the Ben Simmons, Giannis Antetokounmpo pathway.
Yeah, hey, how many 6'10 guys can dribble like that?
Well, that's true. They're pretty much freaks, aren't they? They're two of... I say they're one of a kind, but they're really two of a kind between them. Hey, moving back to our shores, the WNBL had one of their rounds, a solo round. Obviously, the NBL wasn't prominent. Larissa Anderson was pretty heavy on Facebook with some words.
Yeah, I jumped on Facebook and was sick of people saying what the women's elite team should do. This is following the news about Adelaide that we touched on in the last podcast. If you haven't heard about that, you can jump back and we'll fill you in there. She said, stop waiting for others to do it. Stop just giving opinions of what should be done and actually turn up and support the WNBL. It's a great point, because no matter what people say, unless you get bums in seats and there's revenue going back to the clubs, all the words in the world don't matter.
That's a good point, because there's a lot of stuff going out about this surrounding women's sports, not just recently. It's probably the last 2 to 3 years. And I know there's been a lot of investment put into the game on the women's side of things, not just in basketball, but also in other sporting codes as well. And you know, just one off the top of my head is the soccer, the W League. There's a lot of investments gone into that side. And you're probably seeing similarities between the WNBL and the W League. Obviously, the A-League's been getting some traction and really been on the rise. It's probably been the NBL most recently, the A-League, you know, some years back, maybe 5-6 years beforehand. And there's a lot of people that talk the talk, but how many of those actually walk the walk and do put their hard-earned and support women's sport in this country?
Yeah, well, we did actually see a nice turnout to Adelaide's last home game. They had 514 in the house, which is
was it
double
free? Was it free?
What they were averaging. I'm not.
I think
sure,
it was
actually.
Still free entry, of course.
Right. But you're still making money at things other than the turnstile.
Correct.
It is good just to see a crowd there, but I still think having it free is a bad decision long term. Even if, like right now, it's too late for this ownership group, but you've got to set a precedent. They did have 514 fans in the house versus the Caps, and they had an 8-point win for the crowd to watch. So that was a good result.
Well, even then, you look at the number, 514. It's not pretty, is it?
It's not brilliant.
It's elite professional sport.
It's arguably
in the
second
country.
Best basketball league in the world for females.
Correct.
Like, you can
argue
the players
that.
Who come over from the WNBA and play at a similar sort of level to what they were in the WNBA.
and 514 fans. I know that's probably a season high. And I'd say, I mean, I'd hate to know what it is to break even. This is free. This is free entry, so you're not breaking anything. But I'd hate to know what the break even is for, you know, a WNBL franchise for a game. Adelaide free. There's no wonder these guys are losing money.
Yeah. We talked about in depth last week about the price of admission. Look, it's a sad situation. We're still holding out hope that there is brightness around the corner.
Sad situation. On the flip side, we've got a couple of positives in the WNBL. Sydney Uni finally won a game.
And 21 points, if you don't mind.
85-64 over Bendigo. Brittany Smart had a blinder. She was named Player of the Week from the WNBL. I think this is where they can turn it around. I know they've had an abundance of injuries. It hasn't been great for the Flames. But a 21-point win, albeit against Bendigo, who weren't expected to be a top-level team in the WNBL this season. They've surprised a few in the opening six rounds. Sydney Uni have just broken that.
They've lost 21-point win. Now, Bendigo.
There you go, three in a row. I think this is probably where the tables will turn. We've seen, you know, the honeymoon period, the first 6 weeks. Sydney Uni have come out and won a game. I think they'll go on a run. Bendigo, you mentioned, three losses in a row. I think this is probably where they'll come back to the pack and find where their median is at.
Yeah, but when you're 1-10, even if you get on a run, it's pretty hard to get anywhere but last when you start 1-10 there.
They win 4 in a row. They're 4-10. Where are they? 7th or 8th?
Dandenong have currently won 4 games, and they're second last.
There you go. They could still be equal last.
You're relying on Dandenong not to win another game, and you have to win 4 in a row.
Well, congratulations to Cheryl Chambers and her crew. Sydney Uni. No,
it's great to see.
On the board, on the scoreboard. 1-10, you say?
1-10.
1-10. That'll be much better than that coming into the season.
And On the slightly other end of the ladder, we've got the Capitals, who are currently 6-4. They've lost 2 in a row, but they've got a nice little pickup added back to the team.
Well, absolutely. Mariana Tolo returning this week for the University of Canberra Capitals, confirmed. And I'll tell you what, we did mention this on one of the earlier podcasts after round one or round two when they were winning games. The Capitals are going to be tough. Once they're full strength, everyone 100% fit. They've got Kelsey Griffin, Leilani Mitchell, Kelly Wilson. She had 13 points and 11 assists, mind you, last time out. Kia Nurse, Lauren Scherf, and now Tolo back in the lineup. That's a super lineup to go up against the likes of the Boomers, Townsville, and Perth.
Yeah, I think at the moment my pick for the finals would probably be Melbourne versus the Caps. Love the top-end talent of both those teams. The Capitals arguably have the MVP right now, one of the front runners, certainly in Kelsey Griffin.
Dominating.
Who is playing some brilliant basketball and is just going to pair up lovely with Tolo. They're going to be scary. They're going to be scary good going in. We've seen the Boomers get on a little bit of a run here. Perth are flying still, and now the Caps adding some depth to an already talented lineup. Look out. Townsville only at 5-6 can still make a late run as well.
I know it's not on our note sheet at the moment, but just quickly on the WNBL before we move on to some NBL news. I saw a Brisbane team was postponed into the WNBL for potentially next season. There was three financial groups looking to enter a Brisbane-based or a Queensland-based WNBL team to return into the competition. Two of those consortiums had pulled out. There was one remaining, and they've asked Basketball Australia to postpone that bid to season 2020-21?
Yeah, 2020-21. The WNBL released saying that they were disappointed but respect the decisions of the group and look forward to continuing to work on expanding the Chemist Warehouse WNBL into Brisbane in 2020. It's tough timing to have a release like that.
You were hot off the press then, Craig. I did that without notice and you were straight on the blower and got it up and made sure that our listeners were well aware of what was going on. Hats off to you.
Try my best.
But, yeah, you're right. Considering all the news that came out surrounding, obviously, the Adelaide Lightning last week, Larissa Anderson's plea on Facebook and social media to come out and really, you know, stick up for our game and turn up to support the WNBL, is it time that we're still looking at expansion?
I don't think there's anything wrong looking at expansion. Especially if there's ownership groups who do want to put their money into the sport in, and you know, the ownership group might be based in Brisbane, in which case it makes sense why would they want to own a team not in Brisbane.
Of course.
I think maybe that wasn't news that people were waiting for. Maybe just hold that back a couple of weeks while it's so it's not coming out the same week that it's come out that Adelaide are struggling to put a team together post this season.
And on the flip side, speaking of a team that could potentially be in the WNBL, we know that there is a future NBL franchise on its way, and the South East Melbourne Phoenix have, well, whispers had gone around for a little while that their first signing was a big one.
It was the worst kept secret in Australian basketball for a while. I think Bodie might have been the first person to say it on the record, that he actually believed it. But even well before then, there was plenty of whispers. Creek was on SEN talking to Jared Wheatley about why he chose this team.
Why have you decided to sign with the South East Melbourne Phoenix?
Look, it came down to a few things for me. The timing of my life. You know, I thought that, you know, it was a good fallback plan for me to have. Obviously, my dream is to make the NBA, and I'm going to stick out the entire G League season over here with the Long Island Nets and hopefully chase the dream of getting a couple of 10-day contracts, wherever that may be, and hopefully try and knock on the door even more in the NBA world. And look, for me, you know, I always want to look forward towards the future and try and build a sustainable future for myself and my family and my loved ones. So I felt that the new South East Melbourne team, with Tommy Greer at the helm, was a great place for me to lock in a 3-year deal and, you know, have that as a fallback plan just in case things don't go the way I hope they do over here in America.
Why does the idea of this team appeal to you? Obviously, you are a Victorian lad, and I take it you've got connections with the likes of Tommy Greer.
Yeah, look, you know, being close to home wasn't really the feeling place for me. It was more about the exponential growth that this team could have. You know, all the surrounding clubs and suburbs and districts of South East Melbourne, the number of kids, the fans, the supporters, the base that we can really establish ourselves with is one of the most, I guess, glorifying things for me. You know, you can set up a life after basketball, and, you know, the connection with the Hawthorn Football Club and the AFL is obviously the pinnacle of probably any NBL team in Australia. And for me, I wanted to align myself with potentially successful people, successful sponsors, and obviously a successful club. So right now in my life, I want to try and, like I said, further my career on the court and off the court. And I felt that South East Melbourne was the team to do that for me. And like I said, having Tommy Greer sitting at the top there, overseeing everything, was obviously a huge thing for me as well. So I just felt very comfortable with the decision all in all.
So there you go, Mitch Creek talking to Jared Wheatley on SEN earlier this week. Creek obviously being the first signing for the Phoenix. First of all, do you expect him to play at the Phoenix next season?
You've probably got more depth of knowledge on this, but I'd be leaning towards no rather than yes at the present time. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen or it's impossible or anything like that, but that's the way I'd be leaning. How about yourself?
Look, I think this is a fantastic signing for the Phoenix, mostly from a marketing point of view. Obviously, Mitch Creek is a well-known commodity within Australian circles. We've all seen the Adelaide 36ers and Mitch Creek's dream to go to the NBA via the Summer League and have now, of course, the G League play out. He is well-known, as I mentioned, through NBL circles as well, especially. And obviously the Phoenix trying to make their mark in that demographic will go a long way. But in terms of Creek actually putting on a black / lime / whatever colour they're going to wear jersey in Game 1 or Game 28 of the NBL season next year, look, I would highly doubt that. Because I think, as Mitch Creek has explained many times throughout the media, that his dream is to play in the NBA. And I think that dream will become a reality throughout the next NBA season, whether it's because he has to go through the NBA Summer League process again, or whether he's picked up by an NBA team straight away, like Ryan Brokhoff did last season, where he got picked up by the Dallas Mavericks from a European deal. I don't think Creek will be playing in the NBL next season.
I'll tell you one thing. Creek is absolutely tearing up the G League right now. He looks like one of the best players in the league. And if there's an injury to, you know, if a team cops a couple of injuries on the wings, even it's possible that the second half of this season he ends up on an NBA roster anyway. If Brooklyn lose a couple of players long term, but any of the teams really, because he isn't signed with anyone right now. He's not held to Brooklyn. He's obviously playing with their G League team because he had the preseason go with them. But, you know, if a team lost two or three wings for the rest of the season with injuries, every possibility that Mitch Creek gets a go at the end of this season and sticks on. I do think it's either the NBA or he's playing for the Phoenix next year, though. I don't think he'll go the European path.
No, correct. And to be fair, in his media rights over the last 24 to 48 hours since he's been signed, there's been a lot of questions posed to him. And, you know, he's still showing the excitement to potentially play in the NBL as a fullback, as he's termed it. And it was interesting. There was a question posed to him about going back to play in Adelaide. And he said, "I'll go back there with a real chip on my shoulder and they're going to understand that they shouldn't have done what they done. I'm going to play every single second of that 40-minute game and we're going to try raise some hell." That's some powerful words.
Yeah, I kind of want him to be in the league just to see that one game. Like, he'll drop 40 and 20 or something like that.
It would be fantastic to see Mitch Creek back in the Australian League, not just to see him play against the Adelaide 36ers, to see him go up against Melbourne United in, you know, that Melbourne rivalry. I think he'd be great for it because, obviously, you know, country Victorian, he understands that there is a big rivalry between Metro and country in Victoria. So, of course, you're going to see a big rivalry between South East Melbourne Phoenix and Melbourne United. Hey, speaking of Creek and his NBA dream, the NBA, Dante Exum is in Utah, but is he really in Utah or is he going to be in Utah for much longer?
Yeah, so the Utah Jazz recently acquired, previously of the Cavs, Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters the league has ever seen. The game before Korver was acquired, Dante only played the 2 minutes, and I think he copped a DNP coach's decision in Korver's first game, and then only played a couple of minutes in the one after that, and it might have been when the game was over or at the end of the half or something like that. He is seemingly out of the rotation at the moment. Whether that's long-term or not, we can't tell. They definitely needed more spacing on the floor, and it appears as though Korver is going to get all of Dante's minutes and all of Alec Burks' minutes.
So, moving on from that, is Dante Exum's time in Utah expiring, or do you think that he can still find a role at the Jazz?
They gave him $30 million this offseason, didn't they?
Well, that's a lot of money.
You don't sign a guy for that long unless you actually want him around long-term. They obviously saw something. He has, I'll throw a big stat at you now, he is the only Utah wing who, on defense, has forced opponents to shoot less than their field goal percentage this year.
There you go. Great stat there from Craig Freeman himself. I've seen a couple of tweets throughout Twitter over the last week or so, and most of them are from Utah faithful, you know, Utah locals. And there's a lot of fans over in Utah that really show some love and appreciation for Dante Exum. They call it Exum Island. And I'm sure the hardcore Australian Twitter fans know exactly what I'm talking about when we mention and refer to Exum Island. Well, it was jam-packed, Exum Island, you know, 2 weeks ago and before that. I think there's a lot of flights out of Exum Island happening right now, and it's becoming pretty empty.
Yeah, so in the last game, we saw Korver have 17 minutes, Royce O'Neal 19, and Favors 18, and then Tarbo Cephalosha played 7. That was basically their rotation. Neto played 3, and Exum played 2. That's pretty similar to the game before, so it looks like they've locked in on a real tight 8.5-man rotation where Cephalosha's the half. The only way Exum probably gets minutes is if he replaces Cephalosha.
I'm going to put it to you here. Question without notice. I know Dante Exum's a young kid, just really starting to blossom out in his NBA career. Is he an NBA player? And will he be an NBA player for the next number of years?
Yeah, I think he just needs to find the right fit because, like, on defense, he's definitely shown he can fit. He's still 23. He's still fairly young. He was young when he got drafted. His issue right now is he was drafted as a point guard. He's never been able to transition into a point guard into the NBA, and really his handle and attack of the basket isn't even good enough to be a two guard. He's strong enough and good enough to guard most twos and threes. He can guard any point guard in the league. He needs to find a team that just needs defense. Sorry, just trying to watch some Dante Exum highlights there.
He's still on Exum Island.
And he needs to find a team where he doesn't need to handle the ball, can work on defense and play off the ball.
Ben Simmons can handle the ball. Dante Exum doesn't need to handle the ball if he's standing right next to Ben Simmons.
He's trying to get more Aussies in one spot.
Except I don't think Dante Exum can shoot from outside where Ben Simmons needs four shooters, flat out shooters, as we mentioned earlier in the pod. The only reason I ask that is because I know the NBL have severely been targeting, you know, current NBA guys and really getting their words of wisdom and making sure that their interest of coming back home at the end of their
careers. He's not leaving for 3 years. He's got $30 million.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If Utah had have traded Dante Exum, you know, to one of those rich clubs that do buyouts and whatnot, I'm just saying, is the NBL smart to think, when they're currently going down the Dally pathway, saying, "Oh, we can try and get Dally as he ends his career," because currently, you know, he's out of sorts at Milwaukee. Could Dante Exum be a current marketable star if he comes out of the NBA back home?
There's plenty more teams that would take the chance on Dante than would take the chance on Dally. You know what Dally is at this point. You either know if you need him or don't need him at this point. There's people who will still go, "Nah, what if this guy turns into the freak we saw with the ball in his hands as a junior player playing for Australia in under-19 championships? What if he can knock down 37, 38% of his threes and becomes a great 3-and-D player in the 2 and the 3? He's still worth the chance at this young age. I think it's at least 2 years until he's a chance to be bought out on his third year. But even then, I'd be leaning to say after 3 years, have a red-hot crack.
Great point. Hey, the Australian Boomers played 2 games on home soil this past week. They were both in Melbourne at Margaret Court Arena. Now qualified for the FIBA World Championships in China next year. They were easy wins. They won over Iran and Qatar. I was at those games at Margaret Court Arena. And look, I don't think I went in with high expectations.
You didn't talk about it on the last pod. I don't think we both had low expectations.
But the Iran game was much more impressive than the Qatar game. Put it first and foremost. But, I was pretty disinterested before halftime of both games.
Did you stay till both games ended?
Yeah. No, I stayed. I'm a hardcore basketball fan. This is what happens. They had, you know, some pretty good activations around through Basketball Australia. Did a good job of what they had. Obviously, great crowd interaction with some of the juniors, with some on-screen activations. But I don't want to say the quality on the floor, because Australia clearly showed the quality, but it was the opposition that lacked quality. And I hate to say it, and I said it last time, that they're in a lose-lose situation. The Australian national teams get to play more games on home soil when they're in the Asian region. They obviously played less games when they were in the Oceania region. They basically played New Zealand home and away. For some of these games, it's got to be a tough sell.
Yeah, and we've seen another downside off the new FIBA qualifying system as well. Everyone's familiar with Luka Doncic in the NBA right now, the next new sensation. He plays for Slovenia.
Mm-hmm.
Goran Dragic and Zoran Dragic also play for there. Zoran had a couple of years in the NBA. I think he's back playing in Europe now, but Goran is nearly an all-star quality player. Doncic is the gun. Both of them, like our Australian NBA players, aren't available through these windows. A team like Slovenia does not have enough depth to cover that. This team won Eurobasket 2 years ago with Doncic and Dragic leading the way. Two of the best players in Eurobasket, you'd say. They now are not qualified for the World Championships.
Wow.
Because they're two best players. They don't have the depth to cover them. They weren't able to play in the qualifying games. You're now not able to see Doncic and Dragic play for their nation in the World Champs. And it makes it very hard for them to qualify for the Olympics. Doncic is going to be 22 years old when the next Olympics are on. He'll be one of the biggest stars as far as European draw card for basketball will be. Not going to be able to be in the tournament because this qualifying system requires players to play during the NBA season.
It makes me sound like sour grapes then, that I'm not grateful that we can have such depth of NBL guys stepping on the court during the Asian qualifiers. As you mentioned, there's the NBA guys aren't allowed to play during the NBA season. We should just be super grateful that we've got such depth in the NBL.
Also,
the NBL obviously...
competition.
Well, that too. Obviously, the NBL take the break to allow these guys to be released from their NBL clubs to play for the national team. But, yeah, the two games, I don't want to say it was boring, because it was good hoops. And at times, the Australian Boomers showed some great flashes of brilliance. And of course, on the odd occasion, the opposition did too. But, yeah, they were pretty dull.
Well, I know one Iranian player. As far as I know, he might be the only one who's ever played in the NBA. Hamad Hadidi was injured.
Wasn't
so
there.
You have missed the best Iranian player maybe of all time in action. And look, I think Iran had a chance, but when you take away their best player, who I think is 7 foot, they had absolutely no chance of being competitive after that. The Qatar game was even worse, as far as I know. How flat was the crowd?
Well, the Friday night game against Iran, there was 5,500 people there against Iran. And I would have said 5,000 of them were probably Iranians. There
That's
was
good.
Bongo drums and horns and everything possible that you could hear in the crowd. There was some great interaction from court to crowd back to court. The Monday night game against Qatar, I think they had 3,500 people, and I would have said they were all Australian.
That's still not too bad. 3,500
people.
No,
not bad.
Night.
Not bad. But yeah, not much atmosphere on the Monday night. Heaps on Friday night. And that was hats off to the Iranian faithful heading out and supporting their nation.
I did hear you make one small complaint about your seating arrangements.
Yeah, well,
Friday,
I was
though.
Sitting right in front of one of the bongo drums. He was having a great time playing them right behind my two ears. And thankfully, by halftime, they did move. So they gave someone else some headaches. Speaking of, though, we had two games in Melbourne. And I tell you what, we've got some great interaction off the Twitter. And I'll tell you why in I Just Wanna. I just wanna. Well, as I mentioned before, our little sting there for I Just Wanna, we did have some feedback, and our Twitter family has come back with an I Just Wanna. Ian Matthew Bassett.
Any relation to Fred Bassett?
I'm going to say no. But his Twitter handle is an interesting one because you were just speaking about it in between segments.
Yeah, look, at Rap Ragamuffin. I'm going to go Rap Ragamuffin.
Rap Ragamuffin?
Yeah.
Rapragamuffin.
I reckon it's rap rag. Like two distinct separate words.
Rap rag, a muffin.
Yep.
Nice. Well, anywho, Ian Bassett, thanks very much for your feedback. I just want to, this is from Ian, I just want to see a Boomers game in Perth. You want seats filled for a Boomers game, send it to Perth and watch 10,000 fans show up in green and gold.
Well, I'm just taking the WNBL fixture, and I believe the Boomers do play in Perth at some sometime.
They had semi-final fixtures there last season, and they got swept, I believe. But obviously, speaking about the Australian Boomers, and of course, Perth and WA in particular, big basketball fans out there, and mm-hmm. I reckon they'd be right. I reckon Ian would be right. I'd say 8,000 to 10,000 fans would turn up at Perth Arena or Rack Arena, whatever they call it over there at the moment, and they'd get 8,000 fans.
I think it'd be pretty easily, because at the moment, games against Iran and Qatar, Melburnians know they're going to get another Boomers game eventually.
Well, they know it's coming next year. They're playing the USA
exactly.
twice.
That's going to be more competitive, we hope,
mm-hmm.
and more fun. But even going beyond that game, you kind of assume at this point that there's going to be games in Melbourne. There are always games in Melbourne during FIBA windows at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If you throw this game to Perth, they don't know when they're next going to be able to see the Boomers in action. I'm sure all the kids in town will be wanting to get in to be able to see their stars all play together in the green and gold, and they would definitely get more. Oh, I don't think it's even a question. They've got more to those two games than Melbourne.
Absolutely. They've got local heroes over there as well, Nick Kay and Mitch Norton suiting up for the Boomers at the moment.
And then Damo when he's healthy.
Correct. Damien Martin would be there if healthy. I think Ian's onto something. Is it something similar to the... I keep referring back to soccer, but is it the same as the FFA? It seems that the Socceroos games are always in Sydney.
The majority of them tend to be in Sydney. There's a couple in Melbourne every now and then, but are the FFA based out of Sydney?
Yeah, I think they are. I think you're right. Maybe you're onto something there. Maybe because the FFA are based in Sydney, they can play games in Sydney, maybe due to ease. Basketball Australia, based in Melbourne, they could play games in Melbourne. Could be easier, but, you know, could just be coincidence. But there you go. Ian, send games to Perth. Let's see what type of response we get.
We did have a game in Adelaide last window, didn't we?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Don't think it was that full, though.
No. Well, Adelaide fans, they're usually pretty vocal. They turn up as well, unless you're, of course, going to the WNBL.
Unfortunately. So get down and support the Lightning.
There you go. There's your chance to support basketball. 36ers and the Lightning in Adelaide. Hey, speaking of the WNBL, now this is more of an I just wanted. It's not in the future. It's more looking back. I just wanted to see the WNBL do something special this past week. This was their chance to be in lights, in my opinion. Obviously, the NBL was off. There was two Boomers games in Melbourne, so you can take Melbourne out the way and see the rest of the country on display. They have, five other teams that are not Victorian-based.
And they have a regional Victorian team, isn't really colliding with Melbourne.
Bendigo probably not too focused on the Boomers games at Margaret Court. So they had six teams. thought they could have done something really special and put the WNBL in lights. Obviously, the NBL is taking over a lot of eyeballs in basketball throughout the spring and the summer in 2018-19. The WNBL obviously going to have limited opportunities to do this, and I thought between the associations or the clubs and the league, I thought this could have been a really big point on the calendar to highlight and say, let's put our name in lights.
Yeah, and I think it would have been a prime time to try and get more on TV live. There's no NBL games taking up those time slots. I know the NBL deal with Fox is different, but it would have been a great opportunity to go to Fox and say, hey, help us get more viewers on the games that we do have. This week, I know you don't have the NBL. We got some time slots. Work out some sort of deal to maybe get another game or two on TV at a time when people would normally sit down and watch the NBL anyway. Get some basketball fans who are already basketball fans that may not be WNBL fans into your house.
Absolutely. And I mean, last year they tried something with the cluster round at the Melbourne State Basketball Centre. At one of the rounds, they put all eight teams to play there on one weekend. It may have not been a huge success, but obviously they're thinking outside the square and they're doing something about that. That could have been something where they saw something on the calendar this year and said, let's do something that's, you know, outside the box and let's experiment. This is our opportunity. But obviously, you know, it's come and gone, and the NBL's back next week, and they're one of two basketball competitions to take place in Australia for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and this round also had the defending champs going up against the runner-up champs, so it would have been a great round to
grand final rematch.
They
did too
as well.
Obviously, that was the Fox Sports game, and I'm sure it would have rated okay.
It was an SBS game as well.
But as you mentioned, they could have had a couple of more games. So there you go. That's more past than future. Craig, I just want to
see women and men accomplishments in our sport throughout their careers ranked evenly. Recently, you may have seen Corey Homicide's top five Aussie basketballers of all time. I think brought to you by SEN. He was on an SEN show at the time. SEN tweeted it out. You can find it on their Twitter or Corey's Twitter. His list, just to let you guys know, is 1, Lauren Jackson, as it should be, 2, Luke Longley, 3, Bogut, 4, Gaze, 5, Simmons.
So you've got one female at the top, the GOAT, Lauren Jackson herself, and you're saying they've got 4 male players,
well,
2 through 5?
It's not even necessarily Homicide's list. It's more so the conversation around the list. People complaining that Bogut's not high enough, or Gaze is way too high or too low. He's always...
Big discussion point, Andrew
Gaze.
If
you're over 25, you generally have him higher. If you're under 25, you generally have him lower. But the big thing is, people complaining about Simmons not being high enough, or that Simmons is on this list at all. So I think Simmons should be on the list just because he is probably the most talented male Australian basketballer we've ever had. But if he is on your list, you're not counting longevity or career accolades or anything like that. You're simply saying he is so good he's on my list here because he only played for 2 years.
Talent. Going off talent.
How could you say that Ben Simmons has more talent in comparison to Liz Cambage, who was literally the best female player in the world last year?
Well, that's right. I mean, you can name a host of players. Obviously, Liz Cambage not being on that list is controversial in itself, but it's going to be everyone for themselves.
Think about players like Penny Taylor, or that people don't even talk about being in lists like this. Michelle Timms. I just think if you're making the argument about Gaze for longevity and accolades, then you can also make exactly the same argument for Timms and for Penny Taylor. So if you're going to have Gaze on the list, have those players with him. If you have Simmons on the list because you literally think he's that damn talented, which I do, then I think you have to have Liz because she is also that damn talented.
I've always found it interesting with lists that, especially as you mentioned, Ben Simmons being on the list. He's young. He's now. He's not only now, he's the future. Going back a step, the older it gets, or the further away your career has been, the better it always is. So it's so surprising to see Ben Simmons number one or number two on these people's lists, because usually you don't see that. Usually you don't see the best players at the top now. It's always the ones that have had a career forever and a day ago, because even if it was the same, it always gets better. Every day that passes, your career is always better. Or you can always remember your career. You know, I had 6 points in 1995, but that was 25 points now. I had 35 points tomorrow. It always gets better. The stories always get better.
I also just like, I dislike lists to start off with, but I just didn't like the conversation around it, completely ignoring half the sport. That is, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Our Opals have been shitloads more competitive in world tournaments than the Boomers are, and yet there's four males on that list and one female.
So there you go. I Just Wanna. We thank you, Ian Bassett, for your feedback. Give us your best I Just Wanna's. Use the hashtag PNRPod. Let's move forward. So funky. Don't feel funky to me. Don't feel funky to me. So funky, we've only got one on the list, and it's in the WNBL again this week. What is happening with the WNBL? There's just funny stuff happening left, right, and centre. Hey, Melbourne versus Townsville, we mentioned it was on Fox Sports, SBS. Lindsay Allen slipped over in about half court. Jenna O'Hay went to go and pick her up, slipped over some, obviously, some sweat that was left on the ground, and they just ran into each other while they're on the floor. Steph Talbot, a teammate, her reaction was right there, a metre away, gold.
Yeah, and there was Lindsay Allen on her Instagram story, I think, actually had a couple of jokes up about this. Get yourself a captain who injures herself trying to help you up. There's been some weird stuff in the WNBL this season. Great play and just weird stuff.
I'm just surprised. Susie Backovich was on the floor at that point. What is it with...
It's this last season.
Susie Backovich's last season. She's always around it. I know she wasn't involved in this point, but it's her game. It was Townsville's game. Mm. Melbourne versus Townsville. Something sus. Susie Backovich, watch the Townsville Fire next week, because surely something funny is going to happen. Hey, we did have one fan question before we wrap it all up. It's from Elliot Wood on Twitter. And it's a good point, because we haven't touched on the college scene on this week's podcasts. Elliot Wood said, are we at a point yet where we can speculate on a potential role that Duke's Jack White would play in the NBL when he returns home?
Mitch Creek-esque?
No, I'm talking about Jack White, not Mitch Creek. I don't think Jack White is discussion as Mitch Creek.
No, I think he could be a little bit like Lucas Walker.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think, you know, he's real strong. He'll play within the team. His three-point shot's pretty good. He'll probably be able to stroke it consistently from three. He's okay with the ball in his hand, but he's probably at his best cutting off the ball, playing sort of as a three or four hybrid. Like late career Waxy, like last year and this year Waxy, I think that's a pretty good comparison for him.
Certainly having a coming out party this year is Jack White playing alongside all those superstars. We thank you for your fan question. Elliot Wood, if you have anything else that you want to speak about, ask a question, drop a statement, hashtag PNRPod. Craig, it's been a pleasure. Episode 7, the Thon Maker episode. We mentioned him twice. We haven't actually spoken about him, but we've mentioned him twice.
He had 9 points in his last game.
There you go. Doing it for the Milwaukee faithful. The Pick and Pop podcast. Steve Chalmers, Craig Freeman. We'll be back to do it all again next week.